Okay, you know, as a last speaker, you know, I really want to thank organizers. And you know, it's really very stimulating and a very exciting conference here. So we know that the physics, physical theory are developed in cycles. We first discover a lot of phenomena and feel confused. Then we try to have a theory, try to unify them, and we find more phenomena and more confusion, then we have more unifications. And I think historically, there was a few big unification which we can call a revolution in physics. And those revolutions really give us kind of new worldview and which require a new language, basically a new mathematical formalism to really describe this new point of view. And there is a unification of many seemingly very unrelated phenomena. So the first revolution, probably you can call the mechanical revolution, which unified the falling apple and the motion of a planet on the sky. And here, the new worldview is that we view everything as a collection of particles. And each particle follows Newton's law, so we can explain everything. That's a wonderful theory for everything. And so the new mathematics actually is a calculus, so which has been invented to formulate such a theory. And the second one we can say is the electromagnetic revolution, which unify the light, magnetism, electricity, light, and the magnetism. And so in this case, we propose there is a new form of matter we call wave-like matter. And this new form of matter causing an interaction between particle-like matter, which is in Newton's picture. And then there's a Maxwell equation describe the dynamics of this wave-like matter. The mathematics will be the fiber bundle. And then there's a relativity revolution, which unified the space-time and the gravitational interaction. And it's really, even space-time is a dynamical, that's a new kind of wave-like matter. Which causing gravitational interaction between particle-like matter. We have Einstein equation to describe them, and there's a Riemann geometry as underlying mathematical structure. And the fourth one will be the quantum revolution, where we realize that the particle-like matter and the wave-like matter are actually the same thing. So the existence, the existence is very strange. There's a new kind of existence we can call this wave-particle-like matter. And then the mathematics totally changed. It became linear algebra and the tensor product. So there's the fiber bundle and a calculus seems not quite relevant here. And but if you really believe in quantum mechanics, then actually we would conclude that actually the essence of quantum mechanics is really the unification between information and the matter. Because of the because information really that's qubits, the changing qubits is a frequency. So frequency actually is a property of information. Then according to quantum mechanics, the frequency is energy. According to relativity, energy is matter. So if you're really true believer of quantum mechanics, one would naturally conclude information matter is the same thing. And but the qubits are very simple, and so there's a problem. That's you know, the matter in our world, or maybe elementary particle in our world, is very complicated. And can qubits really explain that? And so actually, if elementary particle just spin zero bosons, then the answer will be yes. So this is the point of view of John Wheeler, is the eighth from bit. So that we can view the space as a collection of qubits. So space is qubits, basically. And if every qubit is in a zero state, so we say, oh, that's a vacuum. And if some qubits in one state, we say that's a spin zero boson. They can move around. And we can even have a gapless excitation. If this spin zero boson have a conservation law, we have a spontaneous symmetry breaking with a linear velocity. So, but however, the elementary particle in our world is much more complicated. So they have what I call this eight very strange properties. So it's a locality, an identical particle, and a spin one boson have only two components, And some particle, or actually most particles have Fermi statistics, and they have a spin 1/2, fractional angular momentum, and etc. So certainly why locality is a strange property, actually it's not to me, but after attending this meeting, I find maybe it is a strange property for holographers, so I put it there. And so the first two property actually is naturally explained by this simple picture. So this is, in this picture, the locality is not derived, it's just assumption. We assume there's such locality. And then the identity particle is a natural consequence of this qubits picture. So actually, using qubits picture, it's hard to obtain non-identical particle. So that's, I think, this is a wonderful essence. That's why our world, we all have identical particle. Maybe this is kind of support for this kind of picture. And but however, the other property is really very strange. It's hard to think why they can, whether simple qubits can really produce those properties. You know, after the progress in last 20 or 30 years, we feel that the answer actually for simple qubits, you can really produce those properties, at least for the first seven, you know. And here, but we have to add something. That's what you need to add is entanglement. So actually, if the space-forming qubits have a long-range entanglement, then we can really produce those, maybe eight, I don't know. So actually, the eight is a challenge. Right now, we still worry about that. But however, if you kind of believe this picture, it's really representing using qubits, trying to unify the gauge boson and the Fermi statistics. And so the new worldview here would be that everything is quantum information. That sounds like a Matrix movie. So the key point here is that the matter is quantum information, and the gauge interaction really coming from entanglement. Fermi statistics come from entanglement. The whole standard model may come from the entangled qubits, and maybe even geometry comes from entanglement. Actually, that's a topic of many talks in this conference. Because entanglement plays such a central role, so I would want to say that it's from qubits, not from bits. So let me try to explain this emergence of a gauge theory a little bit more. So we know that there's a chiral spin state or quantum Hall state that have a so-called long-range entanglement. So actually, they have the emergence of a Chern-Simon gauge theory. And another example of long-range entanglement is RAB spin liquid. The RAB spin liquid have this emergence of Z2 gauge theory. But probably the easiest, simplest example to see the emergence of a gauge theory actually is a string liquid. When you have a string liquid, then there's a string density wave. And the string density wave happens to be a vector. And this vector of a string density, describing string density, happens to satisfy Maxwell equation. So that's a way to see how the U1 gauge field emerge from this string liquid. And if you add a little bit more, that if you allow string have many different type, and a string can join in certain ways, one even get a Young-Mills equation. So this way you can get a non-abelian gauge theory. And where how string join and the number of string type, those kind of feature determine what kind of gauge group you get. And so for the statistics, then we have this, again, quantum Hall state provide an example. We can have a fractional statistics. And but at the beginning, the way we understand the fractional statistics is using the picture of a flux charge binding. If you bind the charge to a flux, then we can obtain fractional statistics. And this works in 2+1 dimension. And in 3+1 dimension, we can bind multiple to charge. If you bind the multiple to charge, we can turn a boson into a fermion. But however, there is a more general picture using long-range entanglement. That is, this works for any dimension and with or without U1 gauge field. So that is, if you have this long-range entangled state construct using string liquid, then if the string liquid is such that it is equal to the superposition of all string configurations, then the end of a string will be boson. So that's usual, like a Higgs boson. However, if you have a superposition of a string which have a plus minus sign amplitude, in such a way that whenever you see the crossing string in some projection with this string picture, there's an actual minus sign. You just count the number of crossing. All number of crossing, you have a minus sign. Even number of crossing, you have a plus sign. Then this new kind of string liquid will have a different property. That is, end of string will become a fermion. So and this mechanism works in any dimension of any case. So therefore, we also know that end of string carry gauge charge. So this kind of picture really tie the Fermi statistics and the gauge charge closely together. So which I can say there's a prediction here that all the composite fermion must carry gauge charge. And it turns out that the standard model do not satisfy this property. So it's implied that the standard model, the standard model is incomplete. It should contain actual gauge symmetry. And as a phenomenological consequence, there should be a new cosmic string correspond to this actual gauge series, which may be Z2. So this really representing a picture that all the gauge interaction Fermi statistics really coming from the same thing, is a quantum entanglement. And the quantum entanglement I'm talking about here actually is a many-body entanglement. It's not just entanglement between Bob and Alice, And so the many-body entanglement is very, very complicated. And it's described by wave function of 10 to the 20 variables. As I think it's very hard, almost impossible to write down such a wave function. I think one of the big advantages of many-body theory is that we try to study many-body ground state without writing down many-body ground states. And but however, not writing down many-body ground states really we kind of lost this information understanding of entanglement. So therefore, the big challenge in this many-body entanglement is really how to describe, how to have an intuitive understanding of this many-body entanglement. So that's really a matter of language. So we need a new language or maybe new mathematical framework to really understand the characterize of many-body entanglement. And from condensed matter point of view, actually, there's a pattern for many-body entanglement that corresponds to quantum phase of matter. So understanding pattern of many-body entanglement is the same thing as understanding a different phase of a quantum matter, or basically classifying different phase of a quantum matter. So let's start from something really simple. So let's consider a state with only short-ring entanglement, basically something very much like a product state. And how to understand the classified short-ring entanglement? It's very simple. It's classified by one, So it means there's no different quantum phase. There's only one phase of matter with a short-ring entanglement. And so that's a trivial product state. And we can make things a little bit more complicated, like we can have the short-ring entanglement, but with a symmetry. So we add some symmetry. And in this case, there's a different class now. And so in the last few years, we work out this different class in one theory can be, say, classified by this group homology of with a symmetry group and the SON, which is associated with a space. And then there's a long-ring entanglement. So the long-ring entanglement means some many-body wave function which cannot be turned to the product state using the local unitary quantum circuit of a finite depth. And so if for the long-ring entanglement without symmetry, this became very complicated. And it appears that it can be classified so-called unitary n-category theory with one object. Certainly, this is quote-unquote classified because the definition of a unitary n-category, it's still kind of, there's many versions of this, so we don't know which version are really suitable and things like that. But however, at a lower dimension, the things are much more clear. So in 2 plus 1 dimension, this many-body entanglement basically is classified by the non-abelian statistics, and which non-abelian statistics, which is classified by or described by so-called modular tensor category. And so therefore, so we can say that in 2 plus dimension, the many-body entanglement, or long-ring entanglement, which if you do not have a symmetry, then it's really can be classified as so-called the modular tensor category theory. So this will be the seems right mathematical language to study many body entanglement. Just like the group theory is the right mathematical language to study symmetry breaking states. However, if you consider a subset of a 2 plus 1 dimensional state, but you assume that this 2 plus 1 dimensional topological order have so-called gappable edge, the edge can be gappable. And then this kind of many-body entanglement with a gappable edge is simpler. Actually, it's described by another mathematical theory called the unitary fusion category, so which is actually simpler than the modular tensor category theory. And certainly the simplest thing would be in 2 plus 1 dimension would be if we have a state with only abelian statistics, so no non-abelian statistics. And then it's really can be classified by this integer K matrix. So this is a much more simple situation. And certainly in the long-range entangled states, you can also have a symmetry. If you add symmetry to long-range entangled states, then it became something even richer and more complicated. And recently there's a paper really handled this case. There's a point out that there's some so-called G-crossed modular tensor category. That probably is a mathematical formulation for this. So basically, my point is that the many-body entanglement is really such a new beast. And so one really requires some new language, a new kind of thinking to handle it. But that's not all, because all I talk about actually for bosonic system. And for fermionic system, what I said is not true. So we have to generalize those mathematical theory to really describe many-body entanglement of a fermionic system. And that's kind of interesting. So that's I regard as the feedback from physics to mathematics, that all this tensor category theory, cohomology theory, and et cetera, have a fermionic version or super version, and which is not well studied in mathematical community, maybe. And so maybe one can try to motivate to develop those kind of fermionic version of those mathematical theory. You know, there's some earlier work. There's a kind of a fermionic unitary fusion category trying to study the fermionic topological order with a gappable edge. There's a group super cohomology theory, hopefully, to classify this fermionic SPT states. And there's another way approach to fermionic SPT states using so-called cobordisms of a spin manifold. And so those are a kind of thing people are trying now, try to understand systematically what is many-body entanglement in the fermionic system. And so all those classification supposed to give you something, will give you a table. So this is a table from those category theory. This is from modular tensor category theory. It's for the table for the 2 plus 1 dimensional topological order, which have an n-type of a topological excitation. You know, and here I just have table up to the 5. You know, there's a 6 and a 7. And so it's kind of like a list of a crystal, 230 crystal in 3 dimension. So now here I have a list of a many-body entanglement in 2 plus dimension. But the n-category theory for higher dimensions is very hard to handle, so we still don't have a table for 3 plus 1 dimensional topological order. Okay, and so this many-body entanglement not only give us this a general picture for many-body quantum states, it also gave us a new understanding of gauge and the gravitational anomaly. Actually, it gave us a classification of gauge and the gravitational anomaly. And so here, we view this anomaly free as existence of a UV completion. Or more simply, it can be put on the lattice. If a theory is anomaly free, we say the theory can be put on lattice. So that's what we view anomaly from this angle, not from the invariance and the diffeomorphism or gauge invariance, not from that point of view, using the UV completion point of view. So using this UV completion point of view from the anomaly, then we see that the boundary of a topology ordered states give you some effective theory which have so-called gravitational anomaly. So that means that this effective theory on the boundary of topological order states, you view them as an effective theory, and you ask, can I put this effective theory on the lattice? The answer is no, because it has a gravitational anomaly. Now the best you can do is that you put this boundary theory on the lattice with one higher dimension, and realize this theory as a boundary of the theory in one higher dimension. So this point of view basically is kind of one-to-one. So actually, the pattern of topological order on many body entanglement actually on the bulk classify the gravitational anomaly in one lower dimension, and which include the perturbative gravitational anomaly and the global gravitational anomaly of a known or unknown type. So we can also view this table as a table for type of a gravitational anomaly in 1+1 dimension. And so actually there's many type. And certainly we have the gauge anomaly would appear as a classified by so-called these SPD states. So you know SPD states have a symmetry. Then the boundary of SPD states certainly also have that symmetry. But however, there's a problem. The symmetry on the boundary, this global symmetry, is not gaugeable if the SPD states in the bulk is non-trivial. So therefore, so that means anomalous. So therefore, the different SPD states would give rise to different anomalous gauge theory on the boundary. And there's two versions of SPD states. One is classified by group homology of symmetric group. Another is this group homology of the symmetric group of tensor, this SO group. And this actually corresponds to the mixed gauge gravity anomaly. So there's a more general SPD states where the boundary have a mixed gauge gravitational anomaly. So this really related this, it's kind of interesting that the anomaly actually is a phenomenon of entanglement. So if a bulk have a non-trivial entanglement, the boundary have an anomaly. And this new understanding of anomaly actually gave us a solution for the quite well-known Kaiser-Fermian problem. Etchkin and Priskill have proposed a way to solve the Kaiser-Fermian problem. Basically, it means trying to put this chiral standard model on the lattice. And the idea is that we can have a chiral theory plus a mirror. So this can be put on the lattice. Okay. And then if you can have a way to gap out the mirror sector without breaking the gauge symmetry, then we manage to put this chiral theory on the lattice. So that is the idea. So the new progress from SPD and from topological order allow us to determine when this mirror fermion approach works and when it does not work. So here's one example when it works, that we can have this SO10 or SU4 cross SU cross SU2 symmetry coupled to this 16 copy of a wild fermion. This is one of the famous chiral theory, it's a chiral grand unified theory. And then we can have a four-dimensional lattice system where this chiral fermion theory appear on the two boundary. So this is a chiral sector, this is a mirror of a chiral sector. It turns out that we can argue that the bulk theory which producing this boundary chiral theory is a trivial SPD states and a trivial topological order. So therefore, because it's trivial. So since it's trivial, so that means there is a way we can gap out the boundary without breaking the symmetry by including, say, four Fermion interaction directly. So this gave us a way to put a standard model on the lattice. Okay. So then the last thing, as I mentioned, that so if you say the gauge theory and the Fermi statistics can emerge from qubits, how about gravity? And gravity is very difficult because the gravity involving emergence of space and time, which If I start with the qubits, you do quantum mechanics, so time is already given an absolute, so there's no way to consider the emergence of space and time. But here we'll consider a less ambitious issue. So let's say we are given space and time. We just ask whether linearized gravity or graviton can emerge from qubit system or not. And so if you say that Maxwell equation can emerge, why not Einstein equation? It's just some wave equation. You know, in people in material science study all kinds of wave equations. And so here's some attempts. You know, Chen Kuo-Xu here actually first proposed there is a way to have some kind of so-called pseudo-graviton emerge from the three-dimensional lattice qubit system. I call it pseudo because this gapless mode have a helicity 0 and a plus minus 2, and have dispersion relation omega k cubed, quadratic dispersion relation. And then we improve this, say that there's another design of a lattice system, where the gapless graviton with helicity only plus minus 2 and the linear dispersion relation can emerge. But unfortunately, this proposal is not reliable because to compute dynamics, you need to do some real things. And this real thing does not really work because it involves uncontrolled approximation. So I'm using uncontrolled approximation, we can argue this, but we are not really sure this lattice model really works or not. So we don't really know. But however, there is another design of a lattice model which we can obtain Lorentz dynamics in a very controlled way. And but in this new lattice model, we have this graviton with a helicity plus minus 2, but omega k cubed dispersion relation. So actually, it's a Lipschitz gravity, it's a Luanda G-factor theory of this particular phase. So somehow, in a controlled fashion, we can understand, or we can have the example of emergence of a Lipschitz gravity. But the emergence Einstein gravity is still kind of in the air. And you know, after talking to people in this conference, so I try to explain, you know, from a holographer's point of view, you know, how to view this. And so from holographer point of view, I'm not sure I can really understand holographer's point of view, but anyway, the picture here, I really only bulk, there's no boundary. We really try to present the bulk theory, okay? But how in the bulk theory, we assume suppose there's a holographic description for this. But that really means we assume there's a bulk observer have a local time. You can choose a local time for the nice local time for bulk observer, such that there is an emergence of a locality. And so there is a bulk observer, and you can choose a local time and to get a gauge fixed theory. And this gauge fixed theory have an emergence of locality, which means that the gauge fixed theory have this property that the total Hilbert space is a tensor product of a local Hilbert space, and that's what I mean by locality. So in our point of view, we're kind of taking this as a starting point. So we put a lot of weight on this. So we assume this from the very beginning. But however, in the holographic approach, the bulk theory appear as a dual of a boundary CFT. And it's not natural, you know, it's not clear why the emergent bulk theory as a holographic dual should have this kind of structure. So that's very interesting. So I think that's maybe the main difference of these two ways of thinking. And in this qubit point of view, one really assumes this from the very beginning. But in the holographic point of view, one don't even assume that. Or maybe this locality itself is emerging. That would be very, very interesting. But they have a consequence. That is, if you think locality is emergent, and that means the bulk holographic effective theory do not have to have a UV completion, which means can be anomalous. So I try to say, I don't know now, this question mark. So if that's a prediction of a holographic approach, that anomalous bulk theory can be there, and we don't have any problem with that. I don't know, that's a one thought. So anyway, uh, uh, so, uh, So summarize, it's really the, if you really believe the qubits from this locality, if you start with the qubits and from locality, then basically you can have this, it seems it's possible that the matter is really quantum information, and the Fermi statistical gauge theory and maybe even geometry probably can all arise from Lagrangian entanglement. Thank you.
So about your comment on holography, so the block theory in holography, I mean the direct product structure of the Hilbert space may be emergent, but there should still be a Hilbert space because it's due to the boundary theory. Right? So do you mean like if I have a well-defined finite dimensional Hilbert space, but I don't have a priori defined direct product structure, I can still have anomalies?
Yeah, what I really mean is the following. You know, from my understanding is that the local direct product structure is imposed on the boundary, especially in this tensor network or mirror representation of a holography. And then the question, so why impose this direct product structure on the boundary? Then there's an issue about what is the effective theory in the bulk. So actually, this part I have a little bit of trouble. And you know, from some talk here, that looks like the effective theory in the bulk have a local observables. I mean, this local observer in the bulk, they have their own set of equipment. They do things, do so-called local measurement. But those local measurement, you know, like in John Prisco's talk, is mapped into some operator on the wedge of the boundary. And that seems highly non-local. But somehow, and this is quite interesting, that's something very highly non-local on the edge, from edge point of view, actually representing something, a local measurement in the bulk. So it's really like somehow we can use something very, very highly non-local on the boundary to simulate locality in the bulk. So that's a make a, so this kind of setup would be very different from this assumption that the local operator in the bulk directly correspond to local qubits in the bulk. And this is all I can want to say. But maybe let me put it another way. Can I understand this holographic principle as you always require there is a bulk locality. I don't know, yeah. I just want to say, because it's a locality in a bulk, it's not obvious. So there is a possibility that the emergence of an anomalous bulk theory is not really a big problem. It's not really a contradiction. That's all I want to say.
There are a certain number of people, probably you know, who are working to get the quantum mechanics out of information theory. My impression is you put quantum mechanics in, right? Do you see any way of getting quantum mechanics itself out?
That's a very, very good question. And so certainly in quantum mechanics, time is assumed. So whether one can get rid of time. And actually it's pretty easy. The path integral, you know, in the path integral, the time is not really absolute, it's just some label. So one way to get real time is that not formulate the quantum mechanics as a Hamiltonian system, just as path integral. And there you can even make time discrete. So it's no longer have continuous time. So, and then there is the issue, so that really corresponds to discretized space-time and representing partition function using like tensor network and et cetera. And then there is the issue is that where unitarity comes from. If you start with arbitrary tensor network, you know, it may not correspond to so-called unitary theory. And so those kind of thing, I'm kind of thinking, you know, so if you start with a random tensor network, and without assumption of unitarity, without assumption of a continuous time, what can you get out of it? Actually, it's pretty interesting is that, you know, we know that this topological order have this very stable degenerate ground states. And so we can use in a tensor network to describe topological order. But amazingly that this stable degenerate ground state is even robust against non-unitary perturbation of your tensor network. You add an arbitrary random tensor without thinking about the unitary or non-unitary, but this the fixed point tensor is still very nice tensor for topological order. So actually the fixed point tensor to describe topological order is a stable against non-unitary perturbation. And so this really suggests something quite interesting is that whether the low energy effect theory we see, like a standard model, have this property of robust against non-unitary perturbation. And this may put some constraint on the low energy effect theory. And that also suggests, if this really works, I don't know, you know, if it really works, that may suggest that maybe we don't have to start with qubits, we just start with some tensor network with a random tensor with no unitarity. Maybe at the low energy, the unitary quantum mechanics emerge. So actually, this topological order, this logical qubits is very suggestive, and they are really even stable against non-unitary perturbation. Yeah.
Just a technical question. What is the distinction between a topological order and SPT?
So topological order is a long-ring entanglement.
The SPT?
SPT is a short-ring entanglement. Although it have a T in there, it's a it's really short-ring entanglement. So actually, SPT means not topological order. Not means symmetry protect topological order. It means no topological order.
Thank you, that's very clear.
I'm sorry.
No, it's clear. Okay. All right. More questions about emergence of time, space? there's another mic at the back coming over.
Yes. My question is somewhat related to Jim Hartle's question. One feature of quantum mechanics is a linear superposition principle. Do you see that coming out of all this?
Oh, I don't know. It's, those kind of things became difficult for me. What I try to say is, let me put it this way. Maybe I'll answer that. So now I'm really kind of converted to the category way of thinking. So in a category of thinking, one tries to emphasize relation, not object. So in such sense that, you know, to really understand the object or understand something, it's important to understand its relation with all other things. So those relation is very important. But when you emphasize your relation so much, you may start to wonder, do we have an object? Maybe all we have is relation, and object is an illusion of all those relations. So that's maybe a category way of thinking. So somehow quantum theory and the linear superposition principle is not quite in this way of thinking, because the experiments we see, double slit experiments, black body radiation, those are relations. But somehow we are not happy with just seeing relations. We want to have something behind those relations, which we call wave function. So wave function, I try to say, is an object we invented, trying to understand all these relations for quantum phenomena. And the superposition principle is a property of a wave function. But the thing that all we have is those experiments, those relations. Do we really need a wave function to describe quantum theory? So sometimes the thinking should be categorized quantum theory so that So we don't we get rid of wave functions, and because we know wave functions are physical, everybody knows wave functions are physical. It's their face is not physical, and it's never you can never measure wave functions themselves. But on the other hand, we do have some hard time to formulate that. Maybe we didn't try, and but it's very desirable to me. Actually, it's very desirable to reformulate quantum theory without a wave function, so that's maybe a more physical way to describe a quantum phenomena.
So we're in the end, we're going to be thinking about the world just in terms of mathematics.
No, not mathematics. You know. So, I really feel that the, you know, the entanglement is there. I'm not thinking about the mathematics, but really what I try to emphasize that the many-body entanglement is a natural phenomena. It's there. It's just we don't know how to describe it. And so maybe it's unfortunate that we need so much math to try to understand the many-body entanglement. But maybe it's unavoidable. But on the other hand, whenever we see a new phenomenon, sometimes we just don't have a language for that. And so then we have to invent a new language. So I try to say that the many-body entanglement is one such new phenomena, which is so different from our previous way of describing things. And then we need a new kind of a language, a new kind of intuition, new kind of point of view, try to understand the many-body entanglement. So actually, I'm very, very stimulated by people from quantum information side, from quantum gravity side, from condensation side. They all offer their own angle to look at the same thing, many-body entanglement. It's very stimulating to see all these different point of view. And hopefully, the interaction of different point of view eventually would give us something. So later we can understand the many-body entanglement in very so-called natural way. And I don't know at the moment. I don't know what is the real natural way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Yao Gang.
Thank you.
And thanks. Thanks also to the other speakers in the session. And in closing, I'd like to thank the organizers and all the participants for a really stimulating and very challenging conference.